Well, it's always a pleasure to be here at Locust Grove, and I have to tell you that the genesis of this talk came about almost a year ago when our beloved Lynn Renault called me up one day, and she says, Holmberg, we've been talking here at Locust Grove, and you know, we know a lot about George Rogers Clark and William Clark, but what about those other Clarks? You know, we don't know, and Lucy, and of course, Lucy Clark Crom, but she says, what about those other Clarks? They had a lot of brothers and sisters, didn't they? I said, well, sure they did. There were 10 Clarks in all. And she said, well, you need to give us a lecture on that. And of course, you know, Lynn was a hard person to say no to. And so I said, well, you know, I know through the years I've picked up a lot of info and I can dig up some more. So I said, I'm always happy to come out to Locust Grove. So I said, okay, sounds good. So Mary Beth and I communicated and came up with the date today. And so it's really thanks to Lynn that she basically recruited me to do this talk. And I ended up really entitling it The Other Clarks, those that we maybe don't know so much about. And I want to start out with a quote that I think is very appropriate for the Clark family and all. These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. Heaven knows how to put a proper price upon its goods. And it would be strange indeed if so celestial an article as freedom should not be highly rated. Now, many of you, I'm sure, recognize those famous words. That comes from Thomas Paine, the famous patriot and pamphleteer of the American Revolution, and his The American Crisis, published December 23rd, 1776. It was read to the Continental troops before they attacked Trenton on December 26, 1776, the American Army's greatest victory to that date and a tremendous morale booster. I quote this because I think it is an apt description, again, for not just the five Clark brothers who fought in the American Revolution and some of their future sons or brothers-in-law that did, but for what they did, for the entire Clark family did for our country. The Clark family at that time from Caroline County, Virginia, and later Kentucky, and eventually all of them ended up over in Kentucky. This was a Revolutionary War family who supported independence and made sacrifices to achieve it. The family of John and Ann Rogers Clark and their children stood by their young country in that struggle, risking much and losing much, but also winning much in fame, land, and additions to their family. The Clarks were very much an American Revolutionary family, defined by it, whose future course was set by it. None of the Clarks were at the Battle of Trenton. Two future Clark family members were, William Cron and Richard Clough Anderson, both were, but the Clarks almost certainly read or heard Paine's famous words later and took them to heart. They weathered the crisis and helped assure that the American colonies became the American nation. The Clark family has its famous as well as its relatively unknown, if not forgotten, members. The two famous Clarks, of course, are George Rogers and his brother William. George, variously known as the Hannibal of the West, the Conqueror of the Northwest, the George Washington of the West, all very deserved sobriquets for this hero of the Revolution in the American West at that time. And, of course, Brother William, who gained fame as co-leader of the epic Lewis and Clark expedition to the Pacific and back from 1803 to 1806. These two brothers, these two Clarks, helped extend the borders of the young republic from literally sea to shining sea. George's exploits in the Revolution and seizing British force in the Illinois country helped gain the old Northwest Territory for the United States at the end of the war, essentially doubling the country's size. William's leadership and accomplishments on the Western Trip, as he called it, through the Louisiana Purchase and the Oregon Country, helped secure claim to those vast tracts that doubled the size of the United States yet again. These accomplishments are unparalleled in U.S. history and one that places the Clark family in the rarefied air as a first family of the nation. George and William have enjoyed much more than the proverbial 15 minutes of fame, so we'll focus on the other eight Clark siblings and what we know about them. One, of course, you know quite a bit about because she lived right here at Locust Grove. That, of course, as I mentioned already, is Lucy Clark Cron. The staff here and many of you who work here and have toured here know a lot about her, so we're not going to skip her because there's some interesting things that we can talk about, but we want to delve into those other seven about as deeply as we can, which sometimes we don't know much about. Well, we can't really discuss the Clark siblings without at least mentioning their parents, John and Ann Rogers Clark. Best evidence indicates that the Clark and Rogers families came to America by the end of the 17th century. The Rogers family perhaps by mid-century, the Clarks by the latter half of it, immigrating from Scotland and England respectively, it's believed. A tradition that the Clarks were early settlers at Jamestown hasn't been proven and actually it's been rather discounted. Both families settled on Virginia's Middle Peninsula between the Rappahannock and the York Rivers in what would become in 1691 King and Queen County. John was born in 1725 and Anne in 1728 or 1729, both to land-owning, slave-holding farming families active in their community and members of the gentry class. The two families knew each other and were actually related. John and Anne were cousins. For a variety of reasons, it wasn't unusual for cousins to marry then. John and Anne married in King and Queen County in 1748 or 1749, most likely 1749, and would remain so for some 50 years. Now, you might ask why it's always 1748 or 1749, and it's the lack of public records. Through the years, and this is something we've seen in Kentucky and certainly in Virginia and other states, is the destruction of public records through the years. Sometimes because of a courthouse fire, sometimes because of war. There were many Virginia records, and those including in Caroline and some of the other counties, were destroyed during the Civil War. If not when the county records went up there in the specific county, or if they'd been shipped to Richmond for safekeeping, and then of course Richmond went up in flames. So the dearth of records for trying to go back, you often hit these dead ends and you have to start just finding little pieces here and there to try to figure out the facts as we may best know them. Well, the famous advice of Go West, young man, didn't just apply to 19th century America and the movement across the prairies to the west and onto the west coast. It was a movement in the earliest days of Euro-American and especially Anglo-American settlement. John had inherited 410 acres from his father in Albemarle County, Virginia, just east of Charlottesville. This was the western edge of settlement at the base of the Blue Ridge Mountains, and it was here that the newlyweds settled. Other families in the neighborhood whom they knew were the Jeffersons, the Merriweathers, the Lewises, and the Floyds. Tobacco was the main cash crop, and John farmed the land with the help of some slaves. It was here in Albemarle where Clark sibling number one, Jonathan, was born August 12, 1750, followed by George Rogers, named for Anne's brother, on November 19, 1752. Albemarle County was isolated, transportation was limited, and perhaps the land not the best for farming or already was worn out by tobacco cultivation. Whatever the reason, the Clarks returned east about 1754. Sometimes the dates push it back as late as 1758, but best evidence puts the date to about 1754. To a farm on the western edge of Caroline County, comprised of between 200 to 300 acres, that John had apparently inherited from an uncle. It was there that the other eight Clark siblings were born. Anne on July 14, 1755, John Jr. September 15, 1757, Richard, July 6, 1760. Edmund, on September 25, 1762. Lucy, on September 15, 1765. Elizabeth, February 11, 1768. And William, on August 1, 1770. And finally, number 10, Francis, on January 20, 1773. Poor Anne Rogers Clark was a very busy woman. And there's no mention of a miscarriage or infant death in there either. So apparently all 10 Clark children lived to maturity, which was pretty rare, pretty unusual for that time when infant mortality could be so high. So there were 10 living Clark children born over about a 22 and a half year period. There on the Caroline County farm, the Clark siblings grew up. They helped on the farm, in field and house. They were educated, all were literate. And the boys apparently were sent away to school. It's known that Jonathan and George attended the much respected school of their relative, Donald Robertson, in neighboring King and Queen County. The Clarks did well. They were a respected family involved in the affairs of the neighborhood and at least official members of the Anglican Church, which is the official church for the colonies. They weren't among the elite of the colony, but they were gentry. And John was successful enough that he retained the legal services of Patrick Henry and Thomas Jefferson on occasion. John and Anne were with their unmarried children, moved to Kentucky in the fall of 1784, arriving in March of 1785. Settling, now it didn't take them that long to actually get here. They wintered at Redstone Old Fort near Pittsburgh for the winter, and then in the spring with the ice melt, they came down the river to Louisville, where they settled on a farm christened Mulberry Hill of originally some 256 acres, which eventually grew to about 318. Where they grew, of course, any number of crops and had an orchard and raised livestock and things like that. Mulberry Hill at that time was just a few miles southeast of the little town of Louisville. Now, of course, it's zonked right in there. If you know where George Rogers Clark Park is on Poplar Level Road, that's where Mulberry Hill was, right across there from St. X and Audubon Hospital. As the years passed and the children grew up, both in Virginia and Kentucky, they eventually went their own way. And that's who we want to focus on primarily here today. The seven, and if we include Lucy, the eight of the 10 Clark siblings that aren't as well known as George and William. If we have time afterwards, after we cover them, which I doubt, we can certainly talk about George and William too. They're whole lectures just in themselves. So, Jonathan Clark, sibling number one. Jonathan, as I mentioned, born August 12, 1750, moved west from Caroline County to Spotsylvania and then Dunmore, later Shenandoah County, where he served as deputy county clerk. He was among the earliest supporters of independence. In 1775, he was elected from Dunmore to two revolutionary councils or conventions, July, August of 75, and then in Richmond in December 1775 to January 1776 in Williamsburg. When Virginia regiments were raised for the Continental Army, Jonathan was elected and commissioned a captain in the 8th Virginia, January 23, 1776. He served in campaigns in the South as far as South Carolina and Georgia, and in the North under fellow Virginian George Washington. In the North, he fought in the battles of Brandywine, September 11, 1777, Germantown, October 4, 240 years ago today, actually, October 4, 1777, Monmouth, June 28, 1778, and Paulus Hook, August 19, 1779. These are just the major battles that he was in. And he's actually credited with helping to lead and plan and lead the Paulus Hook, which was a signal American victory. He was promoted to the rank of lieutenant colonel on May 10, 1779, having moved up from major, where he'd been commissioned in January of 1778. And he completed his service in the 4th Virginia when the 8th was merged into it. On May 12, 1780, he became a prisoner of war when General Benjamin Lincoln's entire army surrendered at Charleston, South Carolina. He was paroled In February of 1781, after about 9 months as a guest of the British, and returned home for the remainder of the war. You know, in those days, if you were paroled, you got released, but you had to promise you wouldn't fight anymore. You wouldn't go back to your unit. And being a man of honor, you didn't do that. That kind of plan broke down later on, and it didn't work during the Civil War, and they stopped doing it. During his first Southern tour of duty, it's believed that he contracted malaria, which bothered him the rest of his life. He suffered periodic attacks, relapses from this disease. Jonathan kept a diary for over 41 years. We're fortunate enough to have it at the Filson. From June 1st, 1770, until shortly before his death on November 25th, 1811. Now, Jonathan was a man of few words. He reported the weather, where he spent the night, births, deaths, marriages, his health, and other notable events. Jonathan records periodic illnesses lasting sometimes a week or more, and that's probably the malaria coming back on him. Given the manner in which the diary is kept, Jonathan might have made daily entries, but I suspect it was almost more a week in review kind of thing, possibly because of the briefness, and he was a busy guy and didn't always try to keep at it. If many of you have tried to keep a diary, it can be a chore trying to do it every day. It's a lot easier when you write clear, 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 little rain, clear, you know, Lewis and Clark took off today, you know, kind of things like that, which is essentially what he does. But I tell you what, if you look at it both individually and kind of as a group, the diary tells you a lot, not only about Jonathan, but his life and times. And so it's an amazing document and very informative, and we're very, very fortunate to have it. Meteorologists go nuts over this thing. It's a 41-year record of weather in Virginia, Kentucky, and wherever Jonathan happened to be. You know, we might know where George Washington slept, but we really know where Jonathan slept. And it often was right here at Locust Grove, because he'll say that he was at Major Cron's, you know, and as he said, lay down. So we know that's where he slept that night. Both in 1796, when he was in Kentucky on a little trip visiting the family, and then after he moved here in 1802, until shortly before his death in 1811, we know whenever he was over here at Locust Grove or Mulberry Hill or wherever he might have been. For those studying the 8th Virginia and other regiments during the Revolution and other subjects before and afterwards, his diary is very important because sometimes it's the only mention of an event. For example, and even though we can kind of put other to this, at least one mention is the only one we have. He doesn't say much about the launch of the Lewis and Clark expedition from the Falls of the Ohio here in October of 1803. But his diary entry for October 26, 1803, mentions that Lewis and Clark set off on their western tour and that he jumped in their boat and went downriver with them for a ways until he got off at his son-in-law's farm down there near the Lake Dreamland subdivision, where that is today. Thanks to Jonathan, we know that Lewis and Clark returned to the falls on November 5th, 1806. And there's actually another source that we can piece together to put Clark back in town on that day too. And we also know that Lewis and Clark were right here at Locust Grove on November 8th, 1806 for a family celebration of their return from their, as again, William puts it, the Western trip, which seems to kind of be low, selling it on the low there, but that was William. After the war ended, for Jonathan anyway, he returned to Caroline and Shenandoah counties. On February 13, 1782, he married Sarah Height from a prominent and well-to-do Winchester area family and settled in Spotsylvania County on a plantation near that of his parents, the Stratton.